Any racing sailplane these days is built of composites. And some people think that's because they want the sailplane to be light. That's not true. The real reason they use composites on sailplanes is in order to really achieve natural laminar airflow, you need very accurate airfoil shapes. And you just can't do that in anything besides a composite. You know, if you do metal, anytime you load the wings up, you get oil canning and it destroys the laminar flow. If you make it out of other materials, you just can't keep the shape of the airfoil where you need it to have a natural laminar airfoil. And the other thing, of course, that would really help us out is some sort of anti-bug coating. I live in Nevada, so I don't see very many bugs, but the other day there were bugs everywhere. And if you're trying to do something with natural laminar flow, the bugs trip the boundary layer and cause drag. Now, in terms of structures, I think in the next few years you will see some things happen which really could potentially drive the cost of building airplanes significantly down. And that is so-called additive manufacturing, or 3D printing. Now, most of the 3D printers that you can buy, the hobbyist ones that cost $1,000 or so, they're using some sort of media that is not strong enough, of course, to build primary structures. But for instance, last January, my brother and I visited a company in the Bay Area called Orbital Composites, which is in the process of building equipment to build windmill blades. Now, they're talking about 3D printing windmill blades that are like 150 feet long, each blade. Now, a good sailplane wing, 15-meter sailplane is only 25 feet long. So as they have better techniques, they're using a system where it's laying down one fiber of carbon with exactly the correct amount of resin. And it's basically weaving the matrix using the 3D printing process. Then, of course, propulsion. The best airplanes are the ones that are matched with the propulsion systems. If you look at the history of aviation, one of the keys to the Wright brothers' success in 1903 was their ability to build an engine that created enough horsepower. The Wright 1902 glider basically had the wing warping and all the other aspects of their airplane that they flew in 1903. And historically, great airplanes like a DC-3 is a match to its engine. P-51, of course, you've got a lot more power. F-86, F-104, F-16, and so on. They've all been well matched to the propulsion systems. Now, Lockheed has a patent on something called compact fusion. And if you believe the media, this compact fusion project is in the process of developing a system whereby you would have a fusion-powered aircraft. Now imagine, with fusion power, you would have enough energy in the system when the aircraft comes out of the production line, potentially fly it for several years. So imagine having a 380-sized airplane, which you'd never have to refuel, about every 2 or 3 years. The Navy and their aircraft carriers, they refuel their nuclear aircraft carriers about once every 7 years. And fusion potentially could generate that kind of energy. It really opened up the world of aviation because now you don't have the fuel expenses. And if you had a runway, you wouldn't have to worry about, say you had a runway in the South Pacific someplace, you wouldn't need to have the infrastructure to get all the fuel there. So I'm a little bit skeptical, but Lockheed Martin does have a patent. And the newspaper articles were saying potentially in 5 years. So we shall see. To really reduce the cost of engines, of course, you need economy of scale. And unfortunately, in the aircraft engine business, the car companies are building more engines in a year than probably have built airplane engine companies have built in the history of the world. I personally think automotive engines offer a lot of potential. I have an RV6 that has a Subaru engine on it. I've flown about 450 hours. And the real key to the adaptations is, number one, the cooling system. The people that try to build conversions, they always like to have the cooling system inside the cowling because that makes a nice firewall forward. But in my experience, what you really have to do is have an engineered cooling system that takes the heat out of the cowling, like a P51. On my RV6, the oil temperatures run a little bit high. The oil cooler on the RV, on the Subaru design, is originally underneath the prop. And using the exact same hardware, i.e. the same cooler and the same hoses, I built this duct right here. And the oil temperature went down more than 20 degrees Fahrenheit. And the bottom line is, when the oil cooler is in front of the engine, the heat that is added to the air is running right to the oil pan, and some of that heat's going around in a circle, where with a duct it comes completely out of the cabin. And of course, the prop speed reduction unit is a critical factor also. And that requires a lot of engineering, unfortunately. Another interesting potential is electric. You know, here we've seen several little airplanes that have electric propulsion systems. And at this point, battery technology in the next few years is probably not going to catch up to the energy density of fuel, which makes a hybrid really interesting. Sport Aviation last year had an article about a project in Norway. They're building this two-seat amphibious airplane. It has an electric 129 horsepower engine on the vertical fin. It has a 76 horsepower diesel generator, which is buried in the fuselage right after the cabin. I'm talking about a max cruise of about 130 knots. But the bottom line is, it has lots of potential. Now, as a pilot, it's going to cause interesting operational considerations. Right here, I've got a graph of power required. And this line right here is power available from the generator. And then the top line is the power that's available when I have energy in my battery. So for takeoff, you'd normally, if the battery wasn't fully charged, you'd set on the ground or on the water, in this case, since it's amphibian, until the batteries were charged. And then at takeoff, you use full power, so you've got this much excess power to accelerate and climb with. The batteries in this airplane, I think, are enough to give you a boost to about 5,000 feet AGL. So what's going to happen when you get to 5,000 feet AGL is now the power available is here. So your climb rate is going to decrease, but for most operations, 5,000 feet AGL, you're ready to cruise. Now, if you accelerate to about 100 indicated, you have some excess power still available to pull the power back so that you're now cruising at 100. This excess power is recharging the battery. Then when the battery's recharged, you can push the power up to this point right here, and that's where he's cruising at 130 knots. And I think that's a good piloting technique, because if your battery is fully charged and something happens to the generator, it's kind of like you're in a twin engine airplane, because the engine's going to still, or the motor's going to start keep running on the tail. Now, depending on the size of your battery, you're going to have some range that potentially could get you to an airport. Or even if you don't have an engine failure while you're cruising, when you come down to the airport, if you have some problem at the airport, you've got the battery power that would allow you to make a go around. Also, avionics, I think, will keep making flying safer. I spent some time flight testing a Global Hawk. It has what we call a commanded autopilot. And the Global Hawk pilot can enter a takeoff command. That's the only command he has to give for the whole flight. And the airplane takes off, it climbs to the altitude that it's programmed to, it does its thing, it follows the route that it does, it comes back and lands on the programmed runway. Now, while it's flying, the pilot can give it a heading, he can give it a altitude. It always flies at a constant airspeed, optimum airspeed. And he can change the landing runway that it's going to land on. He or she does not actually fly the airplane. He says land on runway 26 at some airport, the Global Hawk will go land there. And as instruments become cheaper, autopilots become cheaper and stuff, some of that technology could be put into small light airplanes. The picture here is of a Garmin GFC 500 autopilot. It actually incorporates what they call electronic stability and protection. And if your bank angle gets too steep, it nudges the control stick or the control wheel, they tend to roll you out. If you get too fast, it actually picks the nose up. If you get too slow, it'll actually lower the nose on you, or it'll push on the stick, give you some tactile feedback. And it's got what I'd call a panic button. This button right here that says LVL. If you're flying along and you're completely discombobulated, you push that button, and the autopilot levels the airplane, levels the wings, and sets it in level flight.